Businesses are facing challenges. We know that. And our industry is getting affected probably more significantly than many others. But this is a challenge for us to rise to. I'm so tired of hearing about meetings are over, meetings are dead. I even read a book just recently that referred to meetings as being toxic. Meetings are not bad, but there is such a thing as a bad meeting. And ladies and gentlemen, that's where you and I and every one of us in this room and this industry have a responsibility. Not to allow bad meetings. Every one of us here has a contribution to make to making an industry work. Two weeks ago, my second granddaughter was 2 years old. And I watched her. She has this endearing expression where she goes, oh, wow, every time something new or different happens. It's, oh, wow. And she has these beautiful, big blue eyes. And I sat watching her at her party and saying to myself, when did we stop going, oh, wow? When did we start getting cynical? When did we start questioning in a negative way? When did we give up on being impressed? We have a program here for you this weekend, this next few days, for you to paint this canvas. Your job is going to be to reinvent what we're doing. But you can only do that if you come from a position of, oh, wow. I want you to practice, oh, wow, when you hear something from the stage. It's not, oh, I've heard it all before. When you're in a group, when you're meeting with people, what's new? What's exciting? How can we repaint this canvas? Because you have a responsibility to make this conference work. The same as all the professionals behind the scenes here have worked hard to bring you this stimulating event. So we're going to have try some new things. We're going to have a good time together. You'll have seen the Spot Me. Those of you who have been before will recognize it. There's some new features to Spot Me as well. If you go in here to the messages section, there's a new question. And if you touch on that, you could actually type a question in and press send. And in any one of your sessions, this message will get sent through. We'll be trying it here this afternoon. We also have the Twitter feed. So if you've got questions or comments, pass them through. They will come through to us, and we will try and respond to them. So we're going to be trying new things as part of painting this canvas over the next few days. So sit back, relax. We have some great people today to give you some challenging thinking. And for the kickers to kick us off and get us all going, I want you to give a huge, massive welcome, European welcome, to Anne Godey, CMP, the chairwoman of MPI and president of Benchmark 360 Incorporated.
Thank you.
Hola. I'm so happy to be here with you today at this important pan-European conference. To begin, I'd like to recognize our MPI partners. I'd like to thank them for their sponsorship of the MPI organization, and I'd like to thank also our EMEC conference sponsors who have helped us bring this gathering together. There's a great legacy of leadership in this organization that comes from this community. So much so that following me, beginning on July 1st, will be the first international chair of MPI from Europe, Mr. Eric Rosenberg. Eric? Well, if you're like most of our meetings and events community, you're better now than you were 1 year ago, when we met for the EMEC in Torino. And you're experiencing business conditions that have improved even further from when we met in Salt Lake at the WEC. There we had the world stage, we spoke the language of business, we communicated value, and that message resonated. In our December Business Barometer results, we saw predictions of a poor economy drop to a mere 1% of the responses. And in addition, only 5% now report concerns for the perception of meetings and business events. The February Business Barometer indicates conditions improving even further still. Forward movement, no doubt. Future Watch research shows that members expect to return to growth this year and accelerating in the second half. Another important takeaway is a significant improvement in the number of respondents reporting an increase in favorable business conditions. So overall, the news is encouraging. And it seems the return of business events and meetings is well underway. And hopefully every one of you is experiencing this improved environment or will be soon. So what was the contraction movement or the business event targeted as enemy has now morphed. It's now, show me the results. And in some cases, there's pent-up demand for those missing business results. Speaking the language of business became even more important. And instead of looking back, we need to be thinking about what's now. We look forward and we assess the current landscape, what I'm calling the landscape of now. And for as proved that things are now, they're also very different. It's what we've been calling the new normal. Now, the first step is understand what's different and how best to operate in the new landscape of now. Then let's use the changes. Let's use that chaos of the past year and design strategies that will propel us forward and help us be successful in the new business climate. And if we as an industry embrace these changes, we can manage to it. Innovate and thrive. After all, we all know the true definition of crazy, right? That's doing the same things over and over again and expecting a different outcome. So, understanding the new normal means we need to be able to maximize our opportunities. And one key driver of economic growth is innovation. And this is true on the macro level as well as micro level. Innovation can be gradual or it can be explosive. It can be procedural, like changing rules and process. It can involve changing the way we recruit and train. And it can also alter the way we work and collaborate. It can also involve new tools. Any way you look at it, there's a strong link between innovation and growth, and that's exactly what we're going to explore together over the course of the next few days as we define the new normal. The day I opened Beach 360, I posted these words in my office. With change comes opportunity. It was to remind myself to never get comfortable with the way things are and to embrace that upside of change. It was and is a fundamental belief. And at no time did I get the impact of this more than in 2009. So, over the next few days, we'll explore how we can best use change as an opportunity. Understanding the rules of the new business climate, learning how we can adapt and innovate to succeed. We'll use the chaos of the environment to propel us forward and explore the new normal and how to be successful in it. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Yeah. Remember, it's a lot more fun to ride a roller coaster with arms raised overhead as a thrill seeker than as a white-knuckle grip rider. So let's get ready, thrill seekers. Let's get it started. Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce Anna Gomez, the Managing Director of Tourism Board, Costa del Sol. Anna?
Buenas tardes, excelentísimo señor alcalde de la capital de Málaga. Buenas tardes, señoras y señores. Quisiera, en primer lugar, disculpar la asistencia del presidente del Patronato Provincial de Turismo, don Salvador Pendón, pero por motivos de agenda ha sido imposible que esté con nosotros. En segundo lugar, y el más importante, quisiera dar una cordial bienvenida a todos los congresistas miembros de esta prestigiosa asociación, que hasta el próximo miércoles celebraréis vuestro congreso en nuestra ciudad con el sincero deseo de que no solo lo aprovechéis las jornadas de trabajo, incluidas en todo el programa, sino que además disfrutéis de una gran estancia en nuestro destino. Estamos convencidos de que será una excelente oportunidad de intercambio de ideas y experiencias entre profesionales del sector. Nuestra más sincera felicitación a la organización por el esfuerzo que hace en la formación y en la educación de los profesionales. En este tiempo tan difícil, la inteligencia del mercado y la formación son cruciales para trabajar con éxito. Para el Patronato Provincial de Turismo de la Costa del Sol, es todo un honor estar aquí con ustedes, una de las asociaciones líderes más importantes del sector de reuniones y que agrupa a una familia de más de 22.000 empresas. Y es un honor que hayan elegido nuestro destino para albergar su Congreso Europeo Anual. Para nosotros, además, este evento tiene un especial significado. Se trata del primer evento sostenible y responsable en el que el Patronato Provincial de Turismo de la Costa del Sol, junto con el Ayuntamiento de Málaga, la Cámara de Comercio y Turismo Andaluz y con todas las empresas de nuestro sector turístico de nuestra provincia, quisiéramos que esta experiencia piloto sirviera de base para el proyecto de responsabilidad social corporativa y sostenibilidad que el Patronato de Turismo ha iniciado ya con el compromiso de posicionar a la Costa del Sol como destino responsable y sostenible. Una de las máximas conclusiones del quinto foro de Feltur, un foro donde reúne a los expertos del mundo del turismo y también a los grandes operadores, señalan que la crisis financiera no es solo una crisis para el sector turístico, sino que constituye un cambio global de la industria turística a nivel mundial. El sector se enfrenta a un escenario de cambios globales protagonizado por nuevos valores que ostentan los ciudadanos y las empresas, que los efectos de la crisis han acelerado: más austeridad, mayor sensibilidad ambiental, los riesgos del cambio climático con sus derivadas energéticas, la búsqueda de mayor autenticidad e identidad del entorno y mayor corresponsabilidad social de las empresas y consumidores. Estos valores marcan el futuro turístico que debemos integrar en las estrategias público-privadas en las que gestionan los responsables del turismo. Quiero visualizar que el trabajo realizado, en este caso por Tour España, Turismo Andaluz, Patronato de Turismo de la Costa del Sol, excelentísimo Ayuntamiento de Málaga, la Cámara de Comercio y los empresarios del sector, hacen posible que nuestro destino reúna a vosotros, a estos grandes profesionales que son los selectos, lo más selectos del mundo en turismo de reuniones. Espero que disfruten de nuestro estilo de vida mediterráneo, con las múltiples experiencias que pueden ustedes vivir durante su estancia con nosotros en la Costa del Sol. Muchas gracias y buen congreso. Quisiera presentar, que también es un gran honor para mí, al excelentísimo alcalde de Málaga, don Francisco de la Torre. Muchas gracias.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, as mayor of Málaga, I am honored to be able to greet and welcome all those participating in the European meetings and event conference in Málaga. We have today in Málaga participants from Canada and United States, from United Arab Emirates, Iceland, Ireland, and United Kingdom, from France, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, Denmark, Poland, Russian Federation, and Estonia, from Finland, Sweden, and Norway, from Switzerland, Austria, Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovenia, and Serbia, from Cyprus, Malta, Italy, Monaco, Portugal, and Spain. I would like to thank MPI for the confidence they are giving us to host such an important event in the MICE industry, and I would also like to thank our partners in sponsoring the entire event. Tour España, Turismo Andalú, and the Costa del Sol Tourist Board. Without them, this event could not be possible. Just when that you didn't think there was anything else to explore, Malaga introduced itself as a new city destination, which is already a major force for all sectors of tourism, and on our way to be one of Europe's hot list of conference destinations. Set in an enviable location overlooking the Mediterranean and on Spain's most southerly coastline, Malaga City gives a fortunate year-round world climate. We have heritage dating back 3,000 years, incorporating a cultural mix of Spanish and Moorish tradition and architecture, and for art lovers, there is a world of Picasso, son of Malaga, together with top international museum. Yes, the real secret behind this little treasure is the hospitality of our local people. Malaga is full of the light of the sun. The smell of the Mediterranean is elegant, colorful, and carefully landscaped. Malaga City has excellent and complete congress infrastructure, including the Malaga Trade Fair and Congress Center, where we are now one of the best conference centers of its kind, superb hotels with large capacity and outstanding communication, with an international brand new airport and the high-speed train station. Unveiling ambitious plans to seal their place on the international tourist market, Malaga has an agenda that will span across all sectors of tourism, with projects being the rollout over the next 4 years, like the new second cruise terminal and port waterfront leisure area, opera house, new top museum, including the Carmen Thyssen Museum, the underground, etc. The top major association choosing Malaga, SAIT, ICA, and MPI, is a great endorsement for the quality infrastructure and the excellent possibilities we have to offer. Unlike larger cities, Malaga is a walk around town, allowing delegates the freedom of the entire city and a place to instantly capture the magic. Finally, I would like to wish all participants in the Congress both a fruitful meeting and an enjoyable stay in Malaga. Welcome to Malaga. You are already one of ours. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's a great pleasure to have you here with us. Did you enjoy your champagne reception? This champagne reception and this opening general session has been hosted by an organization that's well known to all of you, and it's my great pleasure to invite the Chair of the Meetings and Incentives Events, Reed Travel Exhibitions, Vanessa Cotton, to introduce our guest speakers. Welcome, Vanessa.
Buenas tardes. It's so lovely to be standing here. I've spoken to, it seems like, some of you many times over the years from an MPI platform, and here I am again. I'm really pleased to be here as the chair of Reed Travel Exhibitions Meetings and Incentives Portfolio, and on their behalf as a platinum partner for this European Meetings and Events Conference. Reed has a long-standing and fruitful global partnership with MPI, and it's set to continue with some really new and innovative initiatives. We're delighted, for example, to have announced at MPI's Meet Different in Cancun last week, a very topical and major research alliance to further consolidate our relationship. This initiative, which ties in with our newest event, AIBTM in Baltimore next summer, is set to provide the meetings and events industry with a definitive report on the value of meetings. We all ask ourselves these questions, and it's really hard to come up with an answer when you're talking to people in the boardroom to justify what we all do. How do meetings and events drive business performance? How do organisations measure their effects as business drivers? And how can we benchmark our events against other media? We talk about virtual meetings, we talk about the internet. What's really good about meetings and events? And I think we all know in our hearts, we all know in our heads, but it's actually getting it down in a way that we can communicate to the people who allocate spend. So whether you're from a corporate, association or agency sector, this major piece of research is designed to provide you with the key information on trends and developments, particularly in the North American market, that will have a significant impact on your business. And we'll be giving you the whole scoop next summer. So watch this space. One of the areas that we at Reed think our exhibitions are really distinguished by is our commitment to best professional education. And our global partnership with MPI includes the development of education programmes at all our events, not just in Baltimore, but of course in Barcelona at our flagship event here in Spain, Abu Dhabi and Beijing. I think it's an indication of the importance that both organisations place on providing the meetings and events industry with really relevant and useful market intelligence. And I can vouch personally for the hugely positive impact that MPI's education has had on my own career. I joined MPI as a planner member way back in 1994 when Sue Potten, where is she? Strong-armed me, there she is, strong-armed me into the UK chapter, which at that time had reached the heady heights of 50 members. And Anthony, how many is it now? Oh, there you are. Look at what we started. Right from the start, I had an absolutely voracious appetite for everything that MPI could provide. I went to all the educational seminars, I came to the conferences, I made the most of the networking, probably too much sometimes, and I relished the leadership development. I'm absolutely convinced that my involvement with MPI helped my business grow and prosper at an exponential rate. And then, after I sold it, back in 2004, the skills I'd learned and the contacts I made helped me to land a really great role at Excel, London's biggest, I'm still proud of Excel, biggest and best convention centre as its managing director. Many of you, of course, will remember the great event that Excel and Visit London hosted for MPI 2 years ago, the European conference that we had then. And then last year I joined Reed, and I'm still building on my knowledge and contacts, still really enjoying my participation with MPI. I'm very happy to acknowledge the role that they've played in my own professional life. So I've met a few of the first-time attendees tonight already over a quick glass of champagne, and I think, you know, make the most of it, work with your mentors, really try to get involved in the conference, and I hope that you'll get as much out of your association with the organisation as I have over all these years. So let's turn now to this evening's keynote speaker, which on behalf of EIBTM, I'm delighted that we're sponsoring. The first address, The New Normal, Perspectives on the Future, is brought to you by Dr. James Bellini. He's a business analyst, a TV broadcaster, a conference speaker, and a consultant and coach to senior people in corporate life on media relations, presentation skills, and leadership. James, for more than 25 years, has worked for a number of leading TV networks in the UK, including the BBC and several independent channels. In 1990, he was appointed editor and main studio presenter at Financial Times Television, subsequently moving to Sky News to front their business and main news coverage. During his long and illustrious television career, he's fronted such prestigious programmes as The Money Programme, Newsnight and Panorama, and has won many awards and accolades for his TV documentary work. I'm sure he's going to give us a great presentation, so please join me in welcoming Dr. James Bellini to the stage. Thank you.
Hola. Good evening. You know, for several generations, for the past 30, 40 years, the meetings industry, your industry, like many, many other industries, has been shaped and driven by the economic, social and cultural power of the old developed economies, nations here in Western Europe, for example, in North America, more recently nations like Japan. That is what I call the old normal, because over the next 5, 10, 15 years and beyond, we're going to see a new world shaped by many powerful new factors, new emerging economies. We know about India and China, of course, they're going to be colossal in the next 20, 30 years, but more surprising economies like Vietnam, South Africa, Nigeria, perhaps some in the Gulf as well. We're going to see a new global economic geography. It's going to have a huge impact on your particular business. We're going to see a new and vast global middle class, over 2 billion people joining our global middle class in the next 10 and 20 years, all of them potential consumers and customers for your industry. We're going to see a post-carbon agenda that will reshape our lives and decide how and where we live, how and where and if we travel, how indeed down to ordinary everyday things like how we grow and distribute our food. So, ladies and gentlemen, we now see the rise also of a new connected world which will change the rules for your industry, how we communicate, how we share information, how we converse in the years ahead. This new future, in summary, really, means that the meetings industry, your industry, will be stood upside down on its head. And the question you have to ask yourselves is very simple. Are you ready? Quick health warning, though. Some of you might be students of ancient Mayan culture, maybe. A couple of laughs around the room. Yes, some illustrious students here. They believed the world ended on the 21st of December 2012. One theory is they were just pessimists. The other theory is they just ran out of numbers in their calendars. But we see it around us. If you take the trouble to read the Lost Book of Nostradamus, all futurists have to read that to get through their first level degree course. If you consult the Orion prophecies, you'll see very similar things. Some of you might even have seen the movie. How many people here have seen the movie? Yeah. Not many of you, by the way. Very gloomy, pessimistic, not very cheery movie, but I guess logically it's probably going to be the last movie ever made. I mean, if the world's going to end in 2012. I'm an optimist, generally speaking, and to me, the year 2012, I come from London. The year 2012, of course, is when London holds the biggest meeting it's ever held in its entire history, the 2012 Olympic Games, so I wish them all the best of luck. I think the other mistake people make is, and I apologise here for not turning up looking like a refugee from Harry Potter, we're not wizards, we're not magicians, we work in the real world, I work with government departments, international bodies like the EU, the United Nations, large corporations, small corporations, professional bodies like yours, even charities, helping them get some sort of purchase, if you like, on the future. And I think the other thing people think is that we're sort of are wizards and we make stuff up and that we might be able to help them decide who's going to win the Kentucky Derby in 3 years' time. But actually, I work in the real world of statistics and facts and figures and arguments, and I will take or steal my information from wherever I can get it. If I see a report or a study or a survey or an article or I hear a good speech, indeed a speech at an event like this, I will take it and use it. I will always give credit the person who originated, but our business is an holistic business. We need to draw ideas from every possible corner of the world of knowledge. Traditionally, I've described myself as an historian of the future. I think increasingly now, I regard myself as a sociologist of the future, because as we look forward, increasingly, it is actually about behaviours, how we want to live our lives, and indeed, as organisations, how we want to conduct our procedures as well. Quick sharing with you of the major tools of the future, certainly for me, scenarios not from the university world, they're from Hollywood, they're frameworks of the possible, speculation about the future, informed imagination works like that, the possible. Get your head and take it outside of that dreaded box, as we call it, and think afresh. Break with the past, if you like. Creative destruction. Strong trends, things like population, not very difficult. A child of 12 today, in 10 years' time, will be 22 years old. You don't have to be Einstein to work that out. The rise of the new emerging economies of India, China, Brazil possibly, and others, a strong trend. Those strong trends are very predictive. We can kind of rely on them. Weak signals, It's when you put your ear on the railway line and you can hear the train coming a long way away. 4 or 5 years ago, blogging, which suddenly arose out of nowhere, I think, that was a weak signal about new ways of communicating with ourselves, new ways of creating that huge worldwide conversation that is the connected world today. And finally, fourthly, wild cards. Things that we never thought about, things that were never in our plan, either personally or commercially. 9/11 was a wild card. I remember in my own experience after 9/11 having 11 events that I was booked to appear at and work at cancelled under me. So a wild card, or a black swan event as we sometimes call it, because, you know, before the Europeans discovered Australia, the people already lived there, they weren't lost, before Europeans went to Australia, to be more accurate, for Europeans all swans were white. And of course in Australia there was a breed of swan that was black. So the best way to put all this into context and get your intellectual juices working for the next couple of days, Malcolm Gladwell in his book Tipping Point talked about a step change, a move from one kind of a world or situation to another. I believe actually we live in the middle of many, many convergent, interlocking tipping points in all sorts of areas that are creating a completely new set of rules for the way we need to look at the world. So in the very brief time I've got, I just want to touch on demographics. I think we vaguely know the broad outlines of those of that demographic revolution, but I just want to spell out a couple of points about it. Quickly look at global shift, what the new world economy might feel like. Thirdly, sketch out how the post-carbon economy agenda will reshape, I think, the way we do many things, including the meetings industry. And finally, touch on the other part of this brave new world, if we can call it, which is the connected world, of course. So firstly, let's have a quick look at population. The 21st century, this century, will be the century in 1,000 years' time that historians will regard as very, very unusual. We will see a total population boom from 1900 to the right-hand side, 2100, where about another 5 or 6 billion new people will join the planet. It may plateau out or flatten out at about 10 billion, but the important thing to recognize about this huge surge in population growth is that about 95% of it will happen in the developing, emerging economies. In areas like Europe, where we are now, our actual populations will shrink. Population of Italy, for example, by about 2030, 2035, will be 20 million smaller than it is today. So if any of you saving up your euros for that little place in Tuscany, I'd hang on for about 10 years. I reckon I'd be giving them away by then. If you look at the Russian population by mid-century, it could be 50 million smaller than it is today. These are really big, important numbers. I think the second tipping point of importance is we're now more or less living in cities. We are an urban world. 2007, 2008 was the crossover point when more people lived in towns and cities than actually lived on the land. And this is the first, another first in human history. And this century will, in keeping with this development, this urbanized world, will see the rise of huge megacities, 20 million people plus, Tokyo, Mumbai, Shanghai, Mexico City, Manila, possibly New York. I have to stress again that none of those cities, those megacities, will be in Europe either. So it raises issues like, where will our customer base be in years to come? Where will the meetings want to be? You know, where is the demand going to come from? So the other half of this demographics, and I'm really steaming through this at great speed, is that we are, of course, becoming an aging planet. There's good and bad about that, and it's not just the old developed economy. China has an enormous aging population. It also has a warped population, of course, because for a generation or so, they've had a one-child-per-family policy. But we are living much, much longer. And indeed, I would say to all of you that here in Europe, the first person to live beyond 130 years is probably already born. And so this creates all sorts of opportunities and possibilities. But when you look at so many countries and look at how many people over the age of 100 already exist there, I'll just give you I'm sure you have access to these PowerPoint slides after the event. But here's the United States upwards. Here's France upwards. Here's the world in general, and not necessarily spread around obvious countries as I say, Western Europe. But actually in many countries they're quite surprising. So we are as a world getting much, much older. But in a funny sort of world, it's actually an older world that we wouldn't necessarily have contemplated 100 years ago. The average citizen in this century will live on average 30 years longer than they did 100 years ago. And so the likelihood of an 85-year-old man or woman winning the marathon is a high probability. But also what they'll need, they want to go back to school. They want to learn things. They want to have self-improvement, re-education of the things they missed when they were kids or when they were working hard in their early lives. And so there's an opportunity as well. They might just want to take it easy. It's my grandmother. Don't be unpleasant about that. And she has to sit outside now with a no-smoking rule, I know. It's a sad world. And this chap, I know this man, he's 55 years old, and he just bought himself a Harley-Davidson. Harley-Davidson motorcycles, by the way, their biggest market sector is the age 50-plus. And this guy called Peter Clark just bought his first Harley-Davidson. He's an accountant. And I said, Peter, you're an accountant, you're 55 years old. Why are you buying a Harley-Davidson motorcycle? And he said, he's English, he says, because I like dressing up in leather and driving through small villages, scaring old ladies. So we have a very unusual segment of population here, affluent, active, even though a gerontocracy. In the UK, for example, probably true of most European countries, people over the age of 50, 55 own about 70 to 80% of all the financial wealth in the economy. So there's a massive new hidden market for you to look at and to understand in the years ahead. I think a major area for research. I think aging itself will become a major conference topic. So look out for all of these. I know health and healthcare are because I go to those events. And I'm sure you do as well. Right, here's the next big step change, is the shift from the old industrial world of Western Europe, North America, and so on, to what we call the BRICS. BRICS, of course, for many of you will be familiar, Brazil, Russia, India, China. These are already very powerful. They consist of about 25% of the world's land surface, 40% of the world's population. They have a combined GDP, gross domestic product, of about 15 trillion. Not just them. You've got new and emerging economies that are going to be quite important in years to come. Unknown economies like Vietnam, South Africa, Nigeria, possibly some in the Gulf. Bahrain, now one of the most competitive environments on the planet. So, you know, 25, 30 years ago, G7, on the left in blue, was 4 to 5 times bigger than BRICS on the right in blue. By about 2015, on these current trends, they should be at parity. And so this is, again, a brave new world, a different new world. And what it does mean with the rise, yet again, of India and China, and it's funny, you know, the reason I call myself, or have called myself, an historian of the future, is that history has many lessons that are of value to us today. Because, you know, 150, 160 years ago, in the 1830s, the two biggest economies on this planet were India and China. Now, the important thing here is, as India grows at the rate it is, within the next 10, 15 years, we're going to see 500 million or so of lower middle class people coming into the market for the first time. In China, we reckon, here's McKinsey's forecast, 520 million people. We're talking about 1 billion people coming into the lower middle class marketplace for the first time. They'll be first time consumers, the first time they buy cars or refrigerators or indulge in healthcare or education products. And indeed, I think they'll be the next generation of young professionals, and they'll be the marketplace of the future for the meetings industry. Not entirely, but certainly something you cannot possibly ignore. Nor will you be able to ignore the kind of new world we live in. Here's all the new brands and companies that will come with this explosion, if you like, of energy from these new economies. Brands that we'll have to get used to. They'll be part of everyday life. And so our mindset has to change, surely, to accommodate this area. I think the third great challenge we've got is the post-carbon agenda. And it's not necessarily because we all believe in climate change or global warming. I believe a knowledge economy, a modern 21st century economy, should be post-carbon. A carbon economy is dirty, it's filthy, it's polluting, it's inefficient. And if you look at the carbon economy, by the time we've got rid of it, one hopes about 2025, it'll only have been around about 200 years. And again, a historian in 1,000 years' time will look back and say, look at this terrible time when these societies, these cities and towns were filthy and they couldn't see their way forward in the streets and so on. I think we'll look back on this, as I say, in 500 years' time and think we must have been crazy. I think we must have been crazy to get up in the morning at 8 and rush to the office until 5 in the afternoon and all the rest of it as well. So the whole office economy, the factory economy, would be regarded as rather daft. Well, here's the problem defined, of course. We are polluting ourselves to death, whether we like it or not. And that's the expansion, the explosion in CO2 in the past couple of hundred years, accelerating in this century. All the figures, when you look at carbon energy, petroleum, for example, here, it all goes up and then it comes down again. So we're sort of getting over the hill. This is actual and projected global oil production going rapidly downhill from about 2025 onwards. And it's a fact worth knowing is that we have not discovered a major new oil field on the planet since 1960s. And so there is simply a matter of time, I think. Where would it all go? I think it will go principally probably into solar energy, although I think it's going to be a slower journey than we think, making cheap, efficient, reliable, long-lasting solar energy systems will be the long-term future for energy, but it will take a long time. By that time, we might even be on the moon, habiting the moon, and mining helium-3. Helium-3, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, there's enough of that on the moon to successfully supply our energy needs for the next 1,000 years or so, for the end of time almost. So the future has wonderful, exciting opportunities in store for us, but not yet, I think, is really the idea there. And it'll start turning our heads to how we travel. Here is a map that represents where all the air passengers are by region. Of course, it's all north of the equator, isn't it? It's all in North America and in Europe and places like Japan. That's got to change, and I think we'll see a cultural shift. We are increasingly seeing that, and I think this will be the parallel of what we've seen with the rise of organisations like Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace since the 1970s. I think we're going to have some surprising developments in the whole area. Things like food. Now, food you might think is not very important. Well, we eat it all the time, every day. And localization, I think, is going to be a tremendous long-term force where we start growing food in different ways. These are urban farms. There's a wonderful picture of an urban farm off Manhattan Island. Well, you might think it's a bit daft, but actually this one's in Venezuela. Here's a book that people will increasingly read, or books like this. Bringing food production back into your local areas will, I think, be an increasingly powerful force. In some parts of the world, it already is. And the fourth area, in this sort of quick romp, if you like, through the undergrowth of the next 20 years, is, of course, our connected world. And we do recognise, I think, we've moved quite a long way. On the right here, for example, just so you know, is the original mainframe computer developed, I think, by ENIAC. It weighed about 50 tonnes, it had 18,000 vacuum valves, and it was the size of 3 very large coaches. We have moved somewhere considerably by then, I know. We are living in a connected world. Here's a couple of the figures, by the way. 10,000 connected devices for every person by the mid-decade, possibly more than that. But technology like RFID, radio frequency ID cards. If any of you have got one of those cards that you sweep over a transport network ticket office, that is actually RFID. And I think within the next 5 to 10 years, they'll be absolutely central to practically everything we do. So the technologies of a connected world are definitely with us, and they allow us to have these wonderful visions and imaginative stories and thoughts and dreams about what life, working life, might be like. This is one picture I've seen of an office of the future. There's another one. They all look like something out of a space comic. The real office of the future, frankly, ladies and gentlemen, would be more like that than anything else. And that young person sitting there in her new office is what we refer to in the futures game as a digital native. And the digital natives are the people who have inherited the digital age. And they will ask very simple stories about your industry. Why do I have to travel to this meeting, the other half of the world, 2 continents away? Why is the format of this conference borrowed from an old, boring stereotype from the schoolroom, classroom, if you like, format? Why? Can you demonstrate to me the value and the benefit of going to meetings when, in fact, I reckon I can do this online through all my wonderful connections in the digital universe? That's the future as I see it, briefly. As you journey into it, I wish all of you, ladies and gentlemen, good luck. Thank you.
Well done. Well done. Thank you, James. It's very interesting what you're painting. I'm going to try and summarise some of the things I heard, and you tell me if we've got this right. We're talking about a holistic community now, being connected and not as individuals. Would you Is that right?
Yes, but also the point I was making that you can't be a good futurist without being holistic or looking at absolutely everything. So in a way, Paul, I'm inviting all of you to be holistic in the way you look at the world, because it's not sliced up into tiny bits of salami.
Yeah. New ways of communicating with one another. This is obviously very pertinent to us. So I want to ask you the question, where are tomorrow's most promising markets for meeting professionals, and what are the risks associated with them?
Well, you've got to look, obviously, at the emerging middle class, this global middle class. The last time we had an explosion of middle classness is actually in Europe in the mid-19th century. This thing dwarfs it. This thing is colossal in comparison. And these are people who will be coming out into the marketplace. They'll be young professionals. They'll be well-educated. They are going to form an increasing part of the meetings marketplace of the future. You've got to go for them. You said, what are the downfalls or the risks? Yeah. Hanging on to the old business models that you've got, because they will want new ones. They have cultural differences that you've got to learn to understand, and you've got to understand their aspirations. They're not post-industrial. You know, they're enjoying industrial prosperity for the first time. So to capture those markets, I think you've got to go in there, be a bit more of a sociologist, really get to grips with what their cultural aspirations are, and don't try to impress upon them the old models that you've developed as an industry.
So we could be our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Very much so. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you to Dr. James Bellini. Thank you. Oh, wow. Frightening, but could be fun. Yes? Ladies and gentlemen, that was the first of our speakers. Our second speaker this afternoon is a gentleman who is a business innovator. He's a keynote speaker and a best-selling author. Peter Fisk started his life as a nuclear physicist. Promise you, he is not boring. He went on to work with Coca-Cola and Virgin and became the CEO of the world's largest marketing organization, the Chartered Institute of Marketing, and the founder of Genius Works. It's an accelerated innovation business. I've heard him speak before, and he has a lot to share with you. His book, Marketing Genius, poses the questions, how would Einstein and Picasso be doing business today? Please give a warm welcome to Peter Fisk.
They were the first words of the man who would become the rock star of the art world. The man who some people regarded as God, some people regarded as the devil. He called himself God. In the art world, he was one of the few in history, one of the few even today, who had become a millionaire. Now he would be worth a billionaire if he was still alive. And what's most exciting of all is that Pablo Picasso was born right here in Malaga. And if you have the chance, go and visit his birthplace, go and visit his museum. It's not open on Mondays. But a fantastic place to go. You're too busy on Mondays. But what's interesting about Pablo is that for his early years, he followed the rules. His father was professor of art here at the art school in Malaga. As he grew up, he tried to imitate the artists of his time, to be as good as them. He challenged Goya to say, I can do better than you. Just a little bit. He then went to Paris. He trained with Toulouse-Lautrec and Manet, the impressionists of the time. He learned the theory of art. He learned the rules of art. And in his early work, his blue period and his rose period, you can see things which were an evolution, if you like, of what existed, but not even particularly good, in my opinion. And I think if he died at that point, we'd have forgotten him. It was what happened after that which was really important. Because what Picasso did was that word, pith, pith, which means lapith in Spanish, which is pencil. and all of you have a pencil, hopefully in your bag, which I'm going to ask you to use in a minute with your notebook. So maybe get ready. What he did was he started to observe the world around him in completely different ways. He started to use his imagination, not to just be slightly better than Manet and Toulouse-Lautrec, but to be completely different from them. And that's why Picasso is so relevant to our challenge in business today. And say, what is the meaning of meetings in a world which James has just described, with that new middle class in India, China, Brazil, that aging population fueled by nanotechnology and bioscience and helium-3 from the moon? What will they do differently? And Picasso started to reinvent his own world. The biggest thing, if you like, about Picasso was he fundamentally challenged all of the conventions. He looked around him. He said, why is there a stage? Why is there lighting? Why is there all these people? Why did we have drinks before? He asked questions about everything. And then he tried to do things in a very different way. One of his skills was to decompose things, to break them into parts and put them back together. And that's how you started to get images like this, which were completely different from what existed before. Instead of trying to be efficient with the medium, he tried to give it new meaning. He tried to communicate something extra, achieve something more, make people think differently, which I guess is our challenge. And then as the years went on, he got more aware of the world around him still. Guernica, one of his most famous pieces, was a protest at the politics and the futileness of war which he saw around him in the 1930s in Spain. And then as he grew older, he started to think more personally and even more creatively. And up to his 91st year when he died in the south of France, he was producing more in his final year than at any other stage in his life. But more and more different things all the time. If you look at his latest works, then you can see they become more radical, more challenging, more daring, more scary. He would represent sex in completely different ways. He would put sexual organs in somebody's face. He would put somebody's eyes inside in their groin. He would challenge people. Do you like it? Do you hate it? And he loved people to like and hate it at the same time. He wanted to make a mark on people. So Pablo Picasso, what can we learn from him in the world of meetings? Well, I guess the biggest thing of all is he was an independent thinker. He was a free spirit, a person who could imagine a future without having to be propped up by trends, by looking at other people around them, saying, how can I just do a little bit better? How can I add an extra service to what I do today? He jumped to the future. And if you look at the big innovators today, they leap. They leap forwards and then they look back. Because if you leap forwards, you can break the conventions. You can overcome the challenge of those carbon polluting miles which your delegates travel to your event. You can overcome those challenges of no time to come out of the office if you leap forward and create a new vision of meetings and then start to work backwards like Picasso to see how could you do it. And the other thing was, again, he looked to the outside world. He made connections to what mattered to people in this new world. And that's why sex became such a big thing for him. It connected people in a different way. It challenged the convention. It challenged their thinking. So looking from the outside, from your delegate's point of view, from the CEO of the company whose event you're organizing's point of view, look from their perspective. What are they trying to do? They are not trying to organize an event. They're trying to grow their business. They're trying to find new partnerships. They're trying to do something beyond the event. So thinking future back, thinking outside in, if you like, are the two tools which you could use which you could be inspired by Pablo Picasso to create an extraordinary meeting of the future. So I'd like you to rethink. Take your piece of paper, everyone. And I'm going to give you the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is in 10 seconds. I'm going to ask you to write one word. One word. The word is what you think your biggest challenge will be over the next 10 years. One word. One word. Come on, I want that word. Okay, and now stop. Everybody got a word? I now want you to spend 1 minute. And I want you to draw from your imagination, from what James has told you, from what everybody's told you in every review, every workshop, every seminar you've been to about meetings in your life. What do you see as the future of meetings based on meeting that challenge? Draw something on your paper now. You have 60 whole seconds to do it. Go. Seconds to go. Seconds to go. Seconds to go. Come on, you must be a Picasso here. You're in Malaga. You've got 10 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And stop. Okay. Christian. Hello, Christian. Okay, tell us about your vision of meetings of the future.
Oh, my vision, oh. I got 2 beers earlier, so sorry about that.
Failed, but can't drink on the job. So, Bente, excellent. So, Bente, you've got a picture here. Tell us about it.
Well, my biggest challenge is me aging, and I draw myself in 10 years.
Oh, and you look even more beautiful than today. Fantastic. So it's me-centric world of meetings. Okay, that's great. Oh, we've got an interesting one here, Ilka. So tell us what this all means.
My concerns are the virtual events and how do we get the people together? How do we do network?
Okay, and we've got 2 people sitting at the desks and we've got
And there are jobs at home, doing conferences at home, but how do we get this heart here?
Oh, we've got a heart. So in this world of technology, there's a bit of emotion going on. So I guess your challenge is how do you bring together that physical connectedness and the emotion at the same time? Okay, keep drawing as I'm talking and I'm going to come and ask some more of you later. But the challenge is really to think from the future back. Think about how can you explore the world of meetings in a completely different way. One of my friends is Will Whitehorn. He is the vice president of Virgin Galactic, Richard Branson's space business. And it's only 6 years ago since Branson and Whitehorn together said, what do we do now with the Virgin business? We've had music, we've had planes, we've had all sorts of different things. What do we do now? And they said, let's go to space, because nobody else can do it for the general public. And then they said, well, how do we do it? Think about the cost. Think about the years of preparation. And so they found a spacer, a rocket scientist called Bert Rutan, who could do it in a completely different way. Instead of firing off from the Earth at Cape Canaveral, they launched from the back of planes once they were high up in the sky. They thought about the energy used in the green society. What about that? Because a space shuttle takes the energy to light Los Angeles. And they looked at alternative energies. They fast-forwarded the research into algae fuels. And that's what will fuel this year when the first Virgin Galactic flight takes off from Spaceport America in the Arizona desert. So sometimes when you have the guts to think bigger, to think about the future, you can work backwards and think, well, how could I make that happen? And that's your challenge in the meetings business too, to think bigger. So why will people live and meet together in the future? with that heart, when we can connect in all these virtual ways, why do I need to take that day out of the office or that week out of the office to meet? You have to have a fantastic reason. Otherwise, they will not do so. So thinking about what is that big reason, why will people meet? Future back will also be driven by the changing nature of businesses. So in the future, most businesses will not be big and enormous. They won't be your big clients. It'll be the small businesses. It'll be the small businesses with big ideas. And businesses will work in much more virtual ways, in ecosystems, with lots of partners to do the things we are. That will enable them to be much more flexible. This company here is Li and Feng. Li and Feng make about 40% of the clothing you will find in the shopping malls of the Kudam or El Corte Inglés or wherever it might be. They make all of Levi Strauss's jeans. They're a virtual business. They for the producer, says, well, I'll help you design the new jeans. I'll find the fabrics. I'll source it. I'll manufacture it. I'll distribute it. I'll do the merchandising. I'll do the marketing. I'll do the back office for you. What do you need to do as a business? It's about ideas. And then it's about forming relationships with all those partners. And they're the kind of reasons why you will need meetings in the future to help these virtual companies to come together in different ways, to make decisions, to actually move their business forward, as opposed to just stand back and listen and to be entertained. So thinking about what is the different world of your clients in the future, and then thinking about what's the different world of meetings in the future. So how will people meet? We talked about the combination of virtual and physical meetings. I think we will do much, much more before a meeting than we even do today. I think the majority of knowledge sharing, inspiration, idea generation from all of us, the networking, the spot me, all of that will happen before we arrive in Malaga. So by the time we actually spend the time in Malaga, we can do much, much more. We can actually start to make decisions. We can start to think about, well, this is the way I'm going to work together. We can start to develop action plans because we already know each other, because we spend the last 3 weeks online or virtually getting to know each other and sharing ideas. And then we go away afterwards and we start to work on them together because we're a new community. And the second challenge is to think outside in. Keep drawing the picture. So keep thinking about your clients and how is their world changing. When they're sitting there in the audience or they're sitting back at work and they've sent many of their people, what will they be looking for? What will they be looking for to help you do things differently? This is a company, probably the coolest company in the world at the moment. It's called Threadless. It sells T-shirts. Anybody buy T-shirts from Threadless? Phenomenal. Phenomenal. And Threadless T-shirts cost about 5 times more than they would do anywhere else. Why do people pay 5 times more for Threadless T-shirts? Because they're made by real people. They're the designs which you and I have. And every month they invite people to submit the designs, and then they invite people to vote on the designs. The best designs win prizes, about $2,000. So you can make $2,000 if you can design a good T-shirt. And then you can choose from that selection of about 50 designs each month. But then it'll change. So you better buy it now. And they buy another one next time. In the world of current TV, satellite television, user-generated, zero cost of production, because all of the people make the television. And then the people, like you and me, vote on what we want to watch on 521 channel. So thinking about how do we do things differently in a user-generated world? How do we really get all of our brains, all of our ideas to be the things which come into our heads, which we use, we fuse together, and then we go away from Malaga ready to implement, as opposed to just to think, wow, let's think about that. Go away thinking, let's do that. So rethinking meetings, how is it different? How is it different from today? I fundamentally think it will not be about a knowledge sharing event. I think it will be a turning point in a business's calendar or in a business's journey of change. It will be a turning point for large organizations and membership groups in terms of the ways in people work together. They will actually decide to move forwards in a different way. And the meeting organizers will have to do much more to enable that. Look at the success of Lego too. At Lego, it's not about buying the little plastic bricks. It's about the way in which people use them. They build fantastic models with them. And the biggest thing Lego has done throughout its last 20 years, the most successful thing, is to enable photo sharing between people. Look at the model I've made. I bet you can't make that. I bet I can make better. So constantly trying to have one-upmanship, but the ability to bring a community together, to share their passion, to help them to do better than they can do today. There's an analogy there to your business too. So rethink meetings again. What is the value of actually physically meeting? So think about what is that real value to the company or the individual of that meeting. And I promise you, the value is not what happens during the meeting. The value is what happens afterwards. So how can you connect to what happens afterwards rather than just what happens during the event? The challenge from Pablo Picasso is to fundamentally rethink. Just like when Steve Jobs looked at the music market and said, I'm not going to just create a better MP3 player, I'm going to change the model of the industry. Ask yourself, don't just create a slightly better event, meeting or conference with a bit of new technology, with a bit more organization, with a bit of extra drinks or food. Think about how can you fundamentally change it in a bigger, more different and more dramatic way. Think about what is the purpose. You are not in the meetings business. What business are you in? This is Tate Modern, the art gallery. They realized that only about 10% of the population of the UK had ever been to the leading gallery. They looked at why do people not go rather than why they do go. They found a million different reasons why they don't go. They started to redefine the art gallery for different reasons why you go. You go there to take your new girlfriend, your new boyfriend. You go there because you're sad and unhappy. You go there because you've got a headache because you had too many drinks, good party last night. But most people don't go there to look at the art per se. They go there for something extra. And when you go there, you want to just look at parts of it, not the whole thing. So how do you make it more personal and relevant for people? Think about the benefits. Think about the real benefit which people will get out of each event when they have it. So think about how can they do things differently. The Nintendo Wii was so successful because it didn't try to be like the Xbox or the PlayStation. It said, what's the thing you cannot do when you're a geek playing the PlayStation? Do you remember those people? Yeah? You can't play with other people. You're not healthy and fit, and you don't get exercise anymore because you're always sitting down like this. You can't play with your friends. You can't play with your mother and father. You've forgotten them. Or your grandmother and grandfather. The Wii changed that. It looked at the things you could not do. It looked at the problems, and it saw them as opportunities to do things differently. And then rethink the experience, the totality before, during, and after of an event. Rethink, how is it fundamentally different? Live Nation recently signed up Madonna. After years and years with Warner Music, they paid $100 million for Madonna. Why? Because it's not about a recording contract, it's an artist contract now. The money is made in the live events. There's less live events, but when the events happen, they're phenomenal. They cost more, they're bigger, better experiences. How could you learn from the changing nature of the music industry, iPod on one side, but Live Nation on the other side? The extremes, complementary together. So rethink with Pablo Picasso. Rethink whilst you have the opportunity here with the vibes of the rock star of the art industry. And think about how could you do things fundamentally differently? How can you deconstruct the world you know? How can you look at everything around us and say, why does that have to be like that? and how could it be a different way? And as Pablo said, he said, always, 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 my friends, see things differently. Whenever you look at it, look for something different. Look for something different when you're looking at the stage, or when you're looking at around people, when you're looking at the spot meeting. Look for something different. Look on the edges, not the mainstream, because that's where you'll find newness, the weak signals. And then once you've looked for things differently, think different things as well. Use your brains to think, well, how could I apply that idea? How could I overcome that convention? How could I stand out from all these fabulous events which I see around me, and not just be better than, but be different from them? And by seeing things differently and thinking different things, how can you deliver extraordinary results for your clients? And that's the biggest challenge. And Apple had a fantastic ad where they said, here's to the crazy ones, where they talked about Picasso and many others. And I just want to read that to you. Here's to the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs and the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can praise them, you can disagree with them, you can quote them, or you can disbelieve them. You can glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. And that could be you. They invent, they imagine, they heal, they explore, they create, they inspire. They push the human race forward. Maybe they have to be crazy. How else can you stare at an empty canvas and see a work of art? Or sit in silence and hear a song that's never been written? Or look at a red planet and see a laboratory on wheels? While some see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. And that could be you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely fabulous. And if that wasn't, wow, what is? Excellent. Thank you very, very much, Peter, there. Let me pick up what I was hearing, and let's see if we've got this right. You're saying leap into the future and look back. And that's what we're trying to do over these next 2 days here with the group that we've got here. And you were challenging us. But if we're going to do that, if we're going to leap forward into the future and look back, that means we've got to look at things differently. I mean, how do we do that? We're here together. I hear this word community. Is that part of it?
I think the first challenge is to be brave and to draw a picture, hopefully which you now have in front of you, mm-hmm. which actually does not think about all the problems in things, but it looks at all the opportunities in things. So I think that's a big opportunity. Mm-hmm. The second thing you said is that we can support each other in doing that. Because now we have 300 pictures, mm-hmm. we have 300 parts of the big idea. How can we start to connect those different ideas together? And it's very easy to be scared and to be silent and not to share our ideas. Yeah. But how can we share those ideas of our different visions of the futures, and together, meeting organizer and meeting organizer, technical organization and meeting organizer, and so on. All together, how can we create a better future for meetings? And then, you know, how can we make them better? The biggest competition is not our colleagues sitting in the room here. The biggest competition is the CEO or the membership director general saying, we won't spend the money on a meeting this year.
Yes.
So, you know, our challenge is to share the ideas together and create something bigger.
Wonderful session. I have one question I would like to ask you. Whereas it's a great honor to have you here, if the great man himself was here, Picasso, what do you think he would be saying to this group?
Wow. Where's the drink? Where's the women? I guess, well, he would, that's what he does. That's what you were saying. Okay, so I guess the challenge is that, you know, he's not a guy who has the patience to sit around and listen for a long time. He's not the guy who is prepared to read long articles and to listen to long PowerPoint presentations. He wants to be inspired by something, and then he wants to get on with it. And he'd use a whole series of different performance media in order to get this message across. And I just actually prepared something which you might actually just sort of, maybe a little bit like what Picasso would do.
So what I'm hearing is he wouldn't say it, he would show it.
He'd show it, perhaps a bit like this.
Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Fiske.